Now stay tuned for To Your Health, where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall, by B Vital Healthcare, optimize health and performance, and by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. And now, here are your hosts, Mike McBee and nurse practitioner Melanie Dorian.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. This is Mike McBee. I'm with my co-host, nurse practitioner Melanie Dorian, and we have the great privilege of talking with Dr. Ron Swatzina. And from now on, we're going to call him Dr. Ron. And he is with the Houston Neuroscience Brain Center down in Houston, Texas. And he specializes in gaming addiction, and that's what we're going to be talking about. Welcome, Dr. Ron.
Well, good morning. I really appreciate this invitation.
Good morning, Dr. Ron. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks, Mike, for the great intro. For our listeners, I want to give you guys a little bit more background information on Dr. Ron, and he is also going to go a little bit more into his story and what he does. But he is, as Mike introduced, he is the director and chief scientist of neurophysiology research at Houston Neuroscience Brain Center, and he's the founder of Clinical Neuroanalytics. So he's all about the brain and the nervous system. And he also collaborates with one of our local resources here for mental health and brain health, the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback, which is how I got connected with Dr. Ron, with Jessica Ure and her awesome center. We've collaborated, Jessica and I. So this is how I got acquainted, Dr. Ron, with QEEGs, the amazing work that you guys are doing at the Houston Neuroscience Brain Center. So I got introduced with that and doing QEEGs myself, being a survivor of multiple brain injuries and neurological Lyme disease. So I've had a lot of work to do on my brain and nervous system. So thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time. And I want to jump right into your story of how you got to do this work and a little bit more about what you do at your center in Houston.
Well, it's kind of interesting. You talk about brain injury. As a young guy growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, football was big, and so I was heavy into playing football. And during my school career, I had 6 to 8 pretty serious concussions, which meant when I went to college to keep out of the draft, I ended up flunking out that first semester. My brain wasn't ready for it, so I really understood how brain injury could affect your life. They took my draft deferment away and sent me to Vietnam instead. So that started my career in a different direction. When I got back, I got back into the Air National Guard just about the time I joined the Arlington Fire Department. I was a firefighter EMT for the city of Arlington. I'm retired now, drawing a retirement check. And so as a firefighter, you know, we have a lot of time to be able to do something else with our lives. So after I got back from Desert Storm, we were the first unit activated. I spent a year gone to that. I said, I got to finish my degree. So I started in 1971. I finished my bachelor's in 95, finished my master's in 97, and finished my doctorate in 2000, started in 2000, finished it in 2004, a year after I came to work here to Houston. So, and that was all while I was a full-time firefighter. I walked out that door on June 23rd and of the fire department and walked in here the next day and never looked back. So it's been quite a busy. It has been quite an experience, and I think the underlying issue was I always wanted to do my life to help people. I got into the mental health field because of disaster mental health critical incident management team. So it was the study of abnormalities in the brain seemed to be something that I was very personally connected to. I've worked almost 17 years for a center here in Houston and in doing EEGs and quantitative EEG brain mapping, and right in the very beginning, I noticed that there was a lot of abnormalities that we couldn't really explain just from brain injury. And I dug deeper and deeper into that, got another PhD in neuroscience. My bachelor's and my master's and my doctorate is in social work with a heavy emphasis on statistical analysis and research. So what is a social worker doing as a brain scientist? I have no clue, but I love to publish and present my data, and I've been doing that now since 2004 through 2003 when I went to work for the Tarnow Center. And then I opened up my center here in January just for the purpose of trying to specialize in abnormalities that affect the brain.
if I recall correctly, you have over 80 peer-reviewed on brain dysfunction and psychotropic medications as well and related topics to brain health. So you've been hard at work since you definitely hit the ground running, Dr. Ron.
Well, there's not a lot of deal with clinical research but I felt early on that being on the leading edge of science, doing neurofeedback and really trying to get to the underlying physiological, neurological causes for somebody's symptoms was a place that I had lots of voluntary people to donate to my data archive. And so I started collecting data, and it's just like all of a sudden this, back in 2012, it just became clear there was only a limited number of reasons for people's medications not to work, only 4 reasons. And I thought, I got to publish that because I didn't expect that to happen. So that started my publication probably back in 2012. And I've been presenting since, 97 actually. But this is an area that I think is well needed. We need to do clinical research. We have this information. We need to get it out there and publish it. And so that's been my drive. Now I've had a lot of assistants along the way with research assistants that stay with me usually two years between their bachelor's and their master's, and they help me get these things to publications, and I give them authorship. So I had 2 of my ladies go off to grad school with 8 and 9 studies published in medical journals. So you just don't find that anywhere.
That's fantastic. I'm doing a PhD right now, and my focus is going to be clinical research as well. So I certainly understand the importance, and my focus is as well going to be to bringing, you know, research into clinical application and how we can help in chronic complex illnesses, which is my main area in the world of environmental medicine. So I really appreciate what you're doing. I want to segue now into a really specific area of focus of yours, which is gaming addiction, tech addiction. Something right now that we're probably seeing an increase of because of so many people in front of their screens or increased screen time. So tell us a little bit about how you became an expert in gaming and tech addiction.
Actually, I just wanted to tell everybody that we're listening to Your Health on 97.9 The Ren. We're talking with Dr. Ron Swatzina from the Houston Neuroscience Brain Center. And my co-host, Melanie Dorian, he's just about ready to talk about gaming addiction. Very, very important subject. Thank you, Dr. Ron.
Well, thank you for that question. It's curious. One thing that I've got a knack for is observation. And I really didn't understand what video gaming would do to the brain until one day I was working with this young guy. He was 13 years old. And I noticed that he did very well during the week. And then by the time he got in Monday to start to do his sessions, he was doing 2 sessions a week. He was much worse on Monday. So I talked to him about, well, what did you do on the weekend? He said, oh, I'm really into video gaming. I said, well, what kind of hours are you talking about? He said, oh, 12 to 14 hours an evening a day. Wow. And I said, really, that much? So I said, at the time this article came out, I think it was in the New York Times, actually. It came out in 2009, 2010. And they were identifying this as 800,000 to 1 million young boys, mostly, that were so addicted to the games, they couldn't get them out of their rooms. And they would just stay in there 24/7. Their parents would bring them their meals and everything else. And they were talking about the generations that they're losing to video gaming. And they found that when they took these guys off their video games, that the pattern that they developed in their brain, which is an ADHD pattern, remained. And I said, oh my, so maybe excessive video gaming is actually altering the brain to a more ADHD state. And it proved that I was right. And what it does is the brain has to put in filters in order to block the intensity of what it's viewing. And so if you sit in a first-person shooter game for that many hours a day, you're put into that survival mode. And so it has to put in these, what I call filters, in order not to be overwhelmed.
Let me ask you this. So it's as if the brain and the body is trying to protect the human, the person. So it's developing these mechanisms, what you're calling these filters, to help protect against being overwhelmed, too much stimulation. Do I understand that correctly?
That's correct. It's an adaptive response. And I explain it sometimes. If you take an Idaho potato farm boy into New York City and a New York City boy and send him to Idaho, New York City boy is going to be bored to death, and the Idaho potato farm boy is going to be just hyper-stimulated. So maybe not today with COVID, but back then when I told the story originally. So it's just that we adapt to the environment we're in. However, this environment we're in, a highly stimulating environment, is not conducive for success in school. So that's where the problem comes in, because unless you got Big Bird up there dancing at 100 miles an hour and flashing signs and everything else around, those boring teachers will put you out.
Yes, I can see that parallel.
So that's part of the issues that we have to look at. And so they talk about the pros of video gaming, the eye-hand coordination and everything else, and how they could be great fighter pilots and because of their reaction times and everything else. And that's totally true, but in order to become a fighter pilot, you have to get through college, which is putting up with a lot of boring classes. And what we're finding is that the male success rate in college has really started dropping tremendously since 1994 when Mortal Kombat came out. And now the male success rate is down probably 20 points lower than females in equal numbers in attending college, but not walking the stage. So the boys just don't make it across the stage.
And you sent me some fascinating data on this, Dr. Ron, and there's one of the diagrams. I mean, it is incredible in terms of the visual to see the decrease since the 70s and 80s. And you guys did such a good job at color coding this so the visual is easy. And it's so easy to see that something happened in the late 80s, early 90s that males started in terms of, and the what I'm seeing for our listeners is a histogram diagram with percentage of bachelor degree awarded by gender, so male and female, and the decrease pretty significant. So, I mean, I would say, would you say it's correlation at this point, not necessarily causation, but we definitely see that whatever happened in the early mid 90s, male, the percent of bachelor's degrees assigned to males started decreasing pretty drastically.
That's true. And I think, and I'm seeing it in regard to the young adult males that go off to college and after one or two semesters come home because they couldn't get themselves away from the games to attend classes. And sometimes they never even go to their class and they end defeated and coming home. And what do they want to do? Nothing but play video games. So they don't want to work. They don't have any intention to date or anything like this. It's all just they got to get into the games. And it has to do with the time of the middle school for boys and girls both. But middle school and high school are critical for that stage of development called role identity, to where you take on the persona you're going to become the rest of your life. And one of my young guys, he was doing some training one day, and I found out that he did a lot of video gaming. And I said, well, tell me about this persona that you're working with in these video games. He said, I've got several. I said, well, which is the best? He said, Crusher Warrior. I said, I want to talk to Crusher. I don't want to talk to you. And he stood up. I mean, he sat up straight and said, what do you need? I said, he took on a different persona altogether. And I thought this was psychologically really interesting. And I said, Crusher, evaluate this player here that's sitting in this chair. He said, he's lazy, he's fat, and he's slow. I said, what do you do with a player like that? Without hesitation, he reached up and went, delete. I said, you know what's wrong with him? Why don't you fix him? Too much wrong with him. Delete. And I realized at that moment that he had become, outside of the game, he didn't exist. He was only a life support system for a cyber entity that doesn't exist. And I thought, gosh, that's psychologically, they're spending all these hours working on a cyber person that doesn't exist, the skill sets that they don't have in martial arts or shooting or anything like this, and it's all in the games. And outside the games, they don't exist. And I thought that was really kind of disturbing. And then to see them come home, and who are they? If they're not in the games, they don't exist. So who wants to get a job? They don't want to get a job. So I refer to them now as really, they have become house pets. As long as you don't expect anything out of them, they'll be nice little gentle creatures there the rest of their lives. If you just leave them alone, let them play their games. Otherwise, there's going to be hell to pay because, you know, you don't shut down their game. There's going to be arguments.
Folks, we are listening to Your Health, and we are learning some extremely important information here from Dr. Ron Swatzina. He is from the Houston Neuroscience Brain Center. And it's about video games and gender and role identities. It's amazing what you're talking about, Dr. Ron. I'm just blown away.
I'm pretty blown away myself in terms of the level to which, and you hear stories here and there, especially I'm surrounded with families and other parents, mostly, you know, early teenagers right now, like elementary, middle school, but we're starting to see that emerge, some of the issues with addiction to gaming and technology. But to hear how bad it can get, this is really critical for our listeners who themselves are parents or are becoming grandparents and seeing their children and grandkids transition to possibly spending more time, not just on technology, but on gaming. Dr. Ron, this is really important information, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. I'm pretty blown away, actually, by especially this identity that they take on and that they don't exist outside of the game. This is really important information. And you mentioned it seems to affect males, and I read in some of the literature that you sent us beforehand, one of the articles is that, you know, the structure of the male brain seems to be affected a little bit more. Could you just give us like a minute or two on that?
Sure. There is a disparity in, there is by far more males addicted to video gaming than females, especially the more violent first-person shooter games. And the reason for this is in the male brain, their amygdalas, which is responsible for attaching affect to things, it's 14% larger on average in males over females. And so I think maybe the females that get addicted to video games, I would hypothesize that they probably have larger amygdalas than most females. I don't know, that's never been proven, but that's one of the reasons they get more of a charge, more stimulation out of the games, where girls just don't get the buzz that they do out of it. They're not the reward system. So there's where the disparity comes in.
So big amygdalas, not great for gaming addiction.
No, but it's great for going to war.
Make Got
great
it.
Soldiers, you know?
So we can channel that. It can be an asset if it's channeled properly. Okay, to our listeners, the amygdala is part of our brain. These are big words. And but in males, males tend to have a slightly larger amygdala by about 14%, according to Dr. Ron. And this can predispose boys to be more addicted, but it can also be a huge asset in terms of being beneficial in the workforce and in other areas.
And so at the end of my career in high school, the scholarships didn't come through. I was still too small to get any sort of scholarship in a college. I ceased to exist. I mean, who am I? Who was I? And so that's where, because of my limited options and the draft was getting close, I got my choices were get drafted or join the Air Force. So I joined the Air Force and ended up right in the middle of it anyway. But that being said, that was one of those things that I was well adept in the military because my senses were heightened. I didn't have to learn that much. It was just how to survive. And I got really good at that. So
yeah.
It was all a part of the same. So now the video gamings are taking that place. And I do think that these young guys, if they're stuck in the games and everything else, you know, look at joining the military. You got a skill set there that you could probably do something with. But then you got a chance of getting killed. So there's the other side of that, too. But it's just the progression of life for young men that tend to have these brains that are totally set up for combat and not for school. And that's what happened to me.
Oh, wow. Hey, folks, you are listening to Your Health right here on 97.9 The Wren. And we will be back in a few moments. We're talking with Dr. Ron Swatzina from the Houston Neuroscience Brain Center.
You're listening to Your Health on 97.9 The Wren, brought to you by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center, by Be Vital Healthcare, and by Hamilton's on the Downtown Mall, featuring sustainable fine dining on Charlottesville's Downtown Mall for over 20 years. Mike and Melanie will be right back.
Support for this station today is from Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. During this COVID emergency, you can find out about Rebecca's daily hours, mail order options, and front of store pickup at 977-1965 or at rebeccasnaturalfoods.com. Rebecca stands with the community during this time of social distancing and is there to safely provide the nutritional support you need. That's Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barracks Road Shopping Center at 977-1965 or at rebeccasnaturalfoods.com.
Be Vital Health strives to support individuals, companies, and schools of all sizes in all of their health needs. They are now offering COVID testing to companies and schools. Individuals can come to the office, where in most cases, you'll be in and out in less than 30 minutes. They will also come to your company or school. You can visit them at BeVitalHealth.com or call them at 434-964-6270. Be Vital Health supports 97.9 The Wren.
Support today is coming from Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of contemporary American fine dining on Charlottesville's historic downtown mall. At Hamilton's, you'll find a seafood, steaks, and vegetarian fare with a full bar and eclectic wine list. Hamilton's supports sustainability in food production, transportation, and preparation, and in the community at large. You can see the lunch and dinner menus, make a reservation, or book the private dining space for your function all at Hamilton'sRestaurant.com.
And we're back. This is Mike McBee. I'm talking with my co-host Melanie Dorion and Dr. Ron Swatzina from the Houston Neuroscience Brain Center. And we were just getting ready to turn it over to Melanie to ask another question of Dr. Ron.
Thank you, Mike. Dr. Ron, this is amazing information, and I'm going to keep repeating the amygdala because it's a fun word. We know it in medicine and in science, but a lot of our listeners aren't as familiar with it. But for someone, any of our listeners, Ron just explained to us how males are slightly more predisposed to possibly having issues with gaming and tech addictions, but also can be a huge asset in other areas. And that leads me to my next question. In terms of the signs and symptoms for anybody, what would you say the top elements or symptoms that we need to look for?
Something to be an addiction, it has to be the daily living, your grooming, things like this, or you're not eating properly and everything else, you're not exercising. That's one of the areas. Okay, and I know that if you try to get your sons off of these computers, and it's just a big hassle, it's a big blow up, you know, they'll disrupt the milieu of the family, interfering with relationships. And as boys proceed into young adulthood, their focus should be more on securing a career and looking to possibly start a family. And that's not happening. So again, back with relationships. And the third part has to do with any addiction, if it's interfering with your work slash school. And we already have the reports out there that the more gaming is done, the lower the grades are. Interfering with your work, this is not what I thought we were going to have when we got married. And so it's causing these relationship issues. And they say, well, at least I'm not going out drinking. I'm going, there's a lot of problems out there right now. And it's not just with the kids. And everything. So addicted to the games that he was not getting his work done. And he actually got fired. And he was playing 40 hours of, you know, a week and gaming. And then I said, well, let's just go cold turkey. And he went through some tremendous withdrawal symptoms, but I didn't care because he was a doctor and he was an adult and he deserved it. So,
well, Dr. Ron, you are great. All right. Now, you know, to our listeners, you're an adult and you're going to be super by Dr. Ron. Transition might be rough, but it's okay.
That's right. Suck it up.
A very supportive and humorous way, big boy, or your big girl pants on, and we're going to have to deal with this, and we have to change this behavior.
Exactly.
We'll support you through it, but you have to do it. You're an adult. So I love that quote, that you're an adult, so let's go ahead and do it. And we're going to go cold turkey. One of the things you mentioned earlier that I want to revisit a little bit, especially in light of you, one of the components of tech addiction and gaming addiction is if it impacts your school or your work. And one of the statistics you gave us earlier that I want to highlight again is that since about 95, when Mortal Kombat came out, there's been a decline. So in terms of our listeners, this is what we're talking about, guys, is that what Dr. Ron is talking about is the impact on schoolwork. It's not just their grades might slip a little bit, or the extent to which it can get to the point where your kids may not graduate at all if we don't address this early on. So this is really important for our listeners to understand, is that the impact on work and school, especially for school, is that they may not graduate because they do not have the tools to be able to succeed because school is just too boring, like we've talked about earlier, in comparison to what they're used to or addicted to, the stimulation and the gaming.
Video games are all about instant gratification. And we seem to have now two or three generations of kids that have been brought up to where it's all about instant gratification and not about delayed gratification. You know, I think the first thing I thought about when this came up was when they came out with Guitar Hero. Remember that? And they were playing these fake guitars. And I was saying they had such an opportunity to hook up a real electric guitar and let them jam with some of the greats out there and learn to do it. But no, they came up with a fake guitar and they taught them nothing. So you had a time that you could have developed some delayed gratification in getting better and they missed the mark. And so we're not teaching the kids the value of to work hard on something for an extended period of time for the reward down the line.
So one of the things that Mike and I talk about in the issues around social media, and I want to take a minute to talk about that because, and I want to see if you've seen some parallels between the gaming addictions, tech addiction, and now right now the increase in social
media. But we had presenters there that were talking about the texting and the social media and everything like this and keeping up with that and what we find that it's doing. It is very addicting. But it's doing the same thing that the video games are doing. It's just mostly with girls are more into the tech addiction, it seems like, because they're all about communication. Men's brains or women's brains are designed differently. Men's are more for navigation. Women's are more for communication, just the way it is. So they would obviously like that part better. But the problem is I've hired young females, and they were petrified at having to call a patient mother at home. They don't talk on the phone anymore. They've lost the ability to one-on-one conversate with people. It's just like, this is incredible. You've got to be able to speak on the phone. Well, we only text. Well, you got to be able to speak on the phone, you know?
So you're seeing a transition with these girls, young girls, and probably into young adulthood, who are now having challenges communicating because of the increase in and social, and it's fascinating, especially being a business owner. I interview people. Might explain the epic failure of when I was interviewing to get an assistant, epic failure of some interviewees in terms of being able, they looked amazing on paper in person. It wasn't just the stress of the interview. There was something dysfunctional about their ability to communicate with me, yet they looked great on email and on paper. So that might explain some of it.
It really does, because making the eye contact, the amount of information that you pass non-verbally in their lives. Most of it, you know, there was this commercial the other time where these two people were texting and they were in the same room.
Gosh, because that's the only darn way they communicate.
You could probably have had a great interview if you just said, pull out your phone and let's talk.
Let's
you
have know? A chat. So could you give to our listeners some of your top tips? Now we're hopefully better equipped, our listeners and us, Mike and I, to identify someone who might have a tick, gaming or social media addiction. Top tips of, you know, resources where they can go to, but also what can parents, grandparents, or what can, if someone's identified with them themselves, what they can do to start getting help?
First of all, as gently as a creator was drinking alcohol for the amount of their gaming, would you have alcohol in your house, be able to control it? And it's really tough, I know, in this time, especially with COVID around, what are they going to do? These kids have developed the ability of how to create entertainment for themselves. I am so bored is the number one statement I hear out of all of them. You know, when I was growing up, there was no social media or anything, video games, a broomstick and a walnut. We had a baseball game.
Yes.
You know? We could entertain ourselves. We were creative in that regard, but they lack this ability to tap into their creative side and do something with it. So it's like parents, really, for this time of COVID, you have such an opportunity to set out and start a project with them. I mean, build a birdhouse, build a doghouse, get some robotics going, you know, find a drone and get out and fly that. Let's do something real with them instead of doing something cyber with them. And I think that's the number one thing I would say to parents is try to find a way to get back to the basics. You know, what would you do if you were in a agricultural society and you had nothing? You know, families got up, they were isolated, they were on farms, they got up, they ate together, they worked together, they had projects together, they'd school together, and then they went to sleep, you know? So it's just like, we've got to get back to that nature that's in our human nature of just interacting more so and teaching. We're supposed to be teaching our children to become independent. That's our job. It's not our job to make them happy. Our job is to teach them independent. And if they want to leave home, you've done your job well. You know? So that's a sign of a good parent when a kid says, I can't wait to get out of here and get out from under your rules. You've done a great job.
All right. To our listeners here, have you heard this? Dr. Ron says, if your kid is eager to leave, you've done a good job.
There you go.
So, I like that. As a parent, Dr. Ron, in a couple of years, I have a 13-year-old as my oldest. He's eager to leave. I will be using technology, especially in light of this interview. I cannot tell you how better equipped I feel right now.
The good thing about the pandemic we have is that people have become fit as somebody. I can be there and up on the link sometimes, so they'll have access and that information. I would be glad to talk with any parent, set up a Zoom session with them. They can call our office or email, and something like this, we can get that set up, and glad to help them through this process, even though I can't be in your wonderful state, which at times when it's hot, I'd love to be there.
So. You can talk. You can do remote visits. You're doing remote visits.
Correct.
And remote consults.
Correct.
So what is your website, phone number, social media? How can people reach you?
Just email me. You're interested. I'll send you all the contact information and how to get set up and everything like that. But it's HN, it stands for Houston Neuroscience, BrainCenter.com. So that's the easiest way to get a hold of me, and I'm very good at my emails. But I will be glad to help anybody through this. Resources out there, there's very limited resources. There are actually addiction treatment centers in Korea, I hear, and in Japan, but you're not going to go there for that. I hear there's some places that are advertising treatment for a video game addiction. Wow. Because of serious cases that I've tried to work. I've done neurofeedback with them. I've done counseling with them. I've done CBT, everything. And even trying to get, I think the big failure, though, is the parents enable the behavior. And so that's the problem, you know, unless you're willing to put up some good hard boundaries and say, this is not acceptable, and make them want to move out, you're kind of stuck because you're enabling that behavior. So that's the problem.
Got it. So parents, we have to take responsibility and really, really help our kids, our grandkids, you know, go outside, get creative, use their brains differently, set limits on the amount of technology. And I know that's debated in part two or more information. But Dr. Ron, this has been amazing. I learned a ton. I know our listeners have learned a ton as well. And the information on our website when this gets posted as a podcast. Thanks again, Doc. I really appreciate it. We look forward, and I hope everyone's going to go take a look at the Houston Neuroscience Brain Center and get a little bit more information and learn more about you and about
what
you do.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Ron. Really, really enjoyed it. And like Melanie, I learned a ton. And having ADHD myself, it really struck some nerves. And I just, unbelievable. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Hey, I'd like to ask our guest today, Jessica Ure, co-founder and director of the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback, how COVID has affected her business of helping us reduce stress.
Well, because neurofeedback does involve physical contact, I have not been seeing clients in my office since March 12th. Mm. So I have about 15 clients who are were at a stage in their therapy where they could do home training with the equipment. So I have kits that I've put together and rent out to clients, and I help them remotely to attach their own electrodes and run their own sessions at their homes. Mm. So I have been working with some people like that.
Including myself.
Well, yeah. That's great. That's great. I would love to try that. So that reduces anxiety, I think, was the main thing.
It can. It depends on you know, what's going on with the person and why they're anxious. So neurofeedback is a way to help calm and balance the nervous system, the functioning of the actual firing of the neurons. So if your nervous system is over aroused and in high gear, possibly from a high stress situation, neurofeedback can be a way to help to re-regulate yourself a little bit.
So, Mike, why don't we just talk a little bit about some of the stuff we've been reading, since today's episode is really focused on mental health, because I've been doing a lot of research on this, seeing this in my patients, definitely increase in depression and anxiety, and a lot of concerns around long-term mental health, especially because my patient population tends to have chronic illness, and now some of them can be maybe a little bit less resilient because they're already inflamed and struggling with other conditions. And some of the information I've been reading about how this is impacting people is pretty impressive. And we're looking at some Chinese study, for example, where almost 43% of the people who responded were saying that they had increased anxiety around this time around COVID. And there's a really good article on the Harvard Gazette. It came out on April 16, mm-hmm. that was talking about their forum on mental health that went from a few people attending in the past to now over 700 people on the forum. On the April 8 forum. So healthcare providers and people are just really struggling to support patients, or people are struggling to support themselves. One thing that I found really, really, something that was for me unexpected was the discrimination. And the article talked about this a little bit. And I talked to other people, and I also, my family, I'm Canadian, so I talked to my family members in Canada, and they've been in a lot more serious lockdown in the province of Quebec. It's in some areas, possible militaries coming in the streets, and then certainly police. So they've been in very serious lockdown in the province of Quebec. And what my father was reporting is that now they're starting to see discrimination against the elderly. So the people who are at risk, so the younger population is becoming angry and frustrated and anxious about being in lockdown because of the elderly, to protect the elderly. And now we're starting to see discrimination against the elderly. And my father had people close to him at the grocery store. People were physically violent with the elderly, discriminating because of you that were in lockdown. Yeah, it was getting pretty ugly in some areas. So that's something I had not anticipated, and I can really see having a negative impact. The elderly is already at higher risk for depression, anxiety, loneliness, and now we're isolating because that's the only way right now to really slow the spread. But the emotional impact, the trauma that's going to be around this, I think we're going to start seeing a whole different level of issues with mental health, with aging and discrimination around that. So that's something I found really interesting in some of the reading I've been doing around mental health, you know, especially looking at SARS, for example, in 2003, which is nothing like what we're experiencing right now, but is what we have in terms of significance. You know, people over 29, like almost 30% of people through SARS experienced trauma long-term wise. So I think we really have to have this conversation with friends, family, and certainly Jessica and I with our patients, just because this is really going to have a significant impact on our mental health as a planet as a whole, and certainly as a population as a whole in the U.S.
You are so right, Mel. Folks, you're listening to Your Health here on 97.9 The Wren. And we're talking to Jessica Ure, Director of the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback. Jessica, how can our listeners get help?
Yeah, so there's definitely asking for help is the big thing that I think that there's a big push with getting the new resources into people's hands, letting them know where to go to ask for help, encouraging them to ask for help in the first place, and helping them to recognize signs and symptoms that might indicate that they need help. People may never have pursued mental health support before, and they may not really be able to easily identify that they could benefit from doing a telehealth session with a mental health professional. They may be having some physical symptoms that they're not associating with being a result from the psychological stress of what we're going through. And so it may not just be worry or depression or anxiety that they're experiencing. They may feel like they're doing okay mentally, but they may be having a lot of trouble with sleep. They may be just not being able to relax in their body. A significant decrease or increase in their energy level. So not just that they may feel not motivated or disinterested in doing things, but they could feel a surge of energy too that can indicate an imbalance in the nervous system. So, and also bodily symptoms that can be kind of manifestations of the physical, the emotional stress that we're under, stomach aches, headache, muscle pain, even sweating and chills, an increased startle response. All of these things can indicate that the person could really use some support in learning some new strategies that they can do for free at their house, just to help re-regulate their bodies. And that will really also support their immune system and keep them healthier.
So you mentioned sleep, energy level, either surge or decreased, aches and pain and chills. They may think they have coronavirus with those symptoms.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, their anxiety goes up another 10
Absolutely.
Levels.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's happening all the time. Yeah.
So Jessica here, and thank you, Jessica, for joining us. This is really, really helpful and critical for people to understand. So Jessica is the co-founder for the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback. And Jessica and I have been collaborating for years on patients, and she has helped me also with some of my neurological imbalances, especially coming out of having neurological Lyme disease. I had a lot of neurological and cognitive imbalances that I got to experience, and I share because it's helpful to understand my perspective and where I come from. And really, really a critical tool to collaborate with Jessica and the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback, because I've been able to acquire new tools, integrate not just neurofeedback, but integrate as a whole biofeedback. And I learn a lot different tools on how to manage my stress and how to manage the reaction to stress. Because the goal is not to remove all the stressors. That's impossible. It's to manage the body's reaction to stress. And that's something that just has been really important at helping me. And so Jessica, she's a licensed and she specializes in trauma, emotional trauma, and neurofeedback. Really, we're going to focus on today some at-home strategies that people can do and can integrate right away today, this afternoon, to help cope with stress. Again, it's not about removing the stress or the emotions. It's about coping with them better. That's something that was hard for me to understand at the beginning. I want the stress gone, or I want the anxiety gone, or I want, well, not likely, but it's how do you react to it? So those are really important things. And I found that neurofeedback and biofeedback have been critical tools. My patients have had really good success also integrating those strategies. So, why don't you introduce a little bit some of the strategies that you and I have discussed about what people can do at home in terms of coping with all the stress, the anxiety, and the depression that they might be feeling?
Some basic ones, obviously, are to be selective with the sources and the level of exposure that you are giving yourself to news and social media. So really, I think it can be pretty easy to fall into a compulsive pattern of checking the news too often, and also exposing yourself to some really kind of media frenzy that's not helpful. So really kind of put some restrictions on yourself with that. Staying connected, particularly with your inner circle. So the people that you really care about and that you know you can turn to in need. And staying connected with those people, not just for you, but for them too.
That is important. Folks, you're listening to Your Health on 97.9 The Wren. Mel and I are talking to Jessica Ure, Director of the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback, and helping folks through the trauma from COVID.
Having a sense of purpose and providing help to another can be a really bolstering thing as well for people. Also, structuring your time, that's a basic one. Kind of setting aside, whether you're working or not, kind of have a structure for your day, especially with sleep hygiene. Have an hour range in which you're definitely going to get ready for bed and get into bed. You're going to turn off electronics, have a wake-up routine that doesn't range a whole lot. That will really help keep you on schedule, and it will help you stay happier. Also, knowing where to go for help and asking for help when you need it. And I can talk about some of the resources that are local and also national for that. But, you know, really making time, setting time aside to take care of your body and your mind is very important. And some basic things are to check in with your breathing. A lot of times when we're stressed out, we begin to breathe very shallowly and up in the kind of up in the top of our chest. So that can really activate the sympathetic nervous system, that fight, flight, and freeze system that will cause all of these, this tension in the body. It will activate inflammatory responses. It will create foggy thinking and difficulty with decision making. It can make you feel anxious. There's plenty of apps that you can use. There's a free one called Cardia Deep Breathing. It's spelled with a K, K-A-R-D-I-A, Deep Breathing. And that one is a paced breather app. It's very simple. It just has a dot that gets bigger when you breathe in and you fill your lungs up. and then the dot gets smaller when you breathe out. And if you breathe slowly and deeply twice a day for about 20 minutes, you will notice a marked difference in the arousal level of your nervous system. That app is really helpful. There's also a free app that was developed for veterans through the government called CBT-I Coach. So like Cognitive Behavioral Therapy-I Coach. That one has a ton of resources on it. It's sort of like having a therapist in your pocket. And that one is free as well. Another great one is Headspace. I do think they offer some of their meditations for free. And then there is a premium level as well. So lots of apps that can do guided meditations. There's also YouTube is a great resource. Not just for meditations, or I've been playing a lot of like Tibetan singing bowls on YouTube. There are a lot of restorative and yin yoga practices that you can do. You don't have to ever have done yoga before. I call them advanced pillow hugging. So you just get some pillows and a blanket, you know, make yourself a space that, you know, there's plenty of free videos on YouTube where lovely men and women will guide you through doing some very gentle stretches that will help release your muscles and settle you down and slow you down in your body. Really paying attention to what you're eating and drinking and how much. This is one that I think we're all struggling with. And I can't tell you how many memes and friends have told me that they're, you know, they're drinking more wine or beer or whatever. But those things ultimately are going to increase inflammation. They're not going to make you feel good. They're going to disrupt your sleep. So really moderating those and trying to find some healthy foods and drinks that can be supportive and feel good, like some nice herbal teas, and making a routine out of that can be really supportive and simple. And even just finding time to journal, to write. Write a letter to an actual physical letter to a friend. That kind of kills two birds with one stone because you've got the connection, social connection, and some quiet time.
Folks, you're listening to Your Health right here on 97.9 The Wren. I'm Mike McBee, along with my co-host Melanie Dorian. We're talking to Jessica Ewer, director and co-founder of the Virginia Center for Neurofeedback. And she was about to tell us about Marco Polo.
I introduced this to Melanie and she liked it too.
I'm addicted.
And it's a way to communicate with your friends and relatives, but it's asynchronous. So you don't have to say, oh, well, what time are you available? What time are you available? Leave a little video and it's sort of like they just can answer it whenever they have time. I think that takes a little bit of the stress off of kind of planning a time to communicate with someone.
That makes sense. So, yeah. I've kind of come up on my own watching Facebook, you know, I'll go through Facebook and I've decided that the only posts I'm going to look at or, you know, acknowledge are the positive ones. I have a friend down in Virginia Beach and that's all she does. And it's so much fun just to, and there are many people that's all you'll see are positive posts. And so that's plus limit the Facebook time as well. Like you're totally correct on that.
Yes. And I really do like some of those apps that Jessica was mentioning.
Yes, I'm going to put that in our promo. You know,
yep.
Learn the free apps.
Mm-hmm. For meditation, I also use Insight Timer. Cool because they show worldwide who's meditating when you get on. And there's a ton of free guided meditations all the way from 5 minutes to 60 minutes. And they are offering a pretty significant discount for a year membership if you want the premium. But I've been using just the basic unpaid or free one. And that's been helpful for me learning how to do meditation.
What's the name of that again?
Insight Timer. It's an app. So meditation is not something that comes easily for me. I can do very long sessions, but it's been helpful to maintain calmer nervous system. And the breathing has been really critical for me. If I feel like I'm getting in trouble, if I can just stop and take a couple deep breaths and really extend the exhale, and maybe Jessica can go into this a little bit more, but my understanding is that of physiology, inhaling and exhaling requires different parts of the nervous system. And exhaling, especially when you exhale slowly, really calms the nervous system down and involves more of the parasympathetic versus the sympathetic. So the breathing, the exhale is the most important part. And exhaling slowly and calmly will get the body out of that fight or flight or sympathetic mode and put it more in a parasympathetic and calmer mode. So even just like doing 10 deep breaths and exhaling slowly, I found that in myself and my patients to be very helpful. So Jessica, what are your thoughts about that one for the breath?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely right about the parasympathetic. And I think a lot of people think that a way to calm yourself is to take a big breath in and then push it out really fast. And that will actually do the opposite. That will make you feel more anxious. You really want your out breaths to be about one third longer than your in breath. And that's why the guided, the paced breather apps can be really helpful. On average, a great breathing rate is 6 breaths per minute, which equals 4 seconds in for your in breath and 6 seconds out for your out breath. So the pacer can set that. And so you can start, that's a good place to start with a paced breathing, is a 4 second in breath and a 6 second out breath. And then if that feels a little too slow or a little too fast for you, you can tweak it and adjust it to you, to what feels right. But that's kind of a good starting point.
Got it.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I just tried that. It works.
Jessica, I know there is some back and forth about how you guys could be supporting patients and clients through this. I hope there's been some positive updates. And are you able right now to take new patients and new clients on? How is that working?
I think we just are. I don't know that there has been any really clear communication. It's kind of, everything is all over the board, but there are definitely a lot of resources out there, particularly, I mean, locally, it's pretty awesome. There's a site called helphappenshere.org, which has a lot of information about local resources for people. Obviously, Region 10's website, they're connecting people. There are particularly, I mean, University of Virginia's counseling and psychological services is also doing counseling for students and faculty. Telehealth wise, the Women's Initiative is offering that as well. There's a website called supportseville.com that also has links to all of these places. So if you just go to supportseville.com, you can find information about all of those, as well as a lot of us who are in private practice are doing volunteer work. Actually, just yesterday, I signed up for coronavirusonlinetherapy.org, which is actually offering free and discounted rate telehealth sessions for health providers who are on the front lines. Mm. And there's also the Virginia Community Response Network, which is also offering support, particularly for healthcare workers.
Okay.
So there are a lot of resources out there. I think if someone just Google's Charlottesville therapy, they will find a way to connect with a therapist and do telehealth, because there's still a lot that can be done on video or even on phone. And just to have someone outside of the people in your household to kind of share with what's going on with you can be really helpful.
Great tips, folks. Thanks, Jess. We'll be right back.
Be Vital Health strives to support individuals, companies, and schools of all sizes in all of their health needs. They are now offering COVID testing to companies and schools. Individuals can come to the office, where in most cases, you'll be in and out in less than 30 minutes. They will also come to your company or school. You can visit them at bevitalhealth.com or call them at 434-964-6270. Be Vital Health supports 97.9 The Wren.
Support for this station today is from Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barrack Show Shopping Center. During this COVID emergency, you can find out about Rebecca's daily hours, mail order options, and front of store pickup at 977-1965 or at rebeccasnaturalfoods.com. Rebecca stands with the community during this time of social distancing and is there to safely provide the nutritional support you need. That's Rebecca's Natural Food in the Barrack Road Shopping Center at 977-1965 or at rebeccasnaturalfoods.com.
Support today is coming from Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of contemporary American fine dining on Charlottesville's historic downtown mall. At Hamilton's, you'll find a seafood, steaks, and vegetarian fare with a full bar and eclectic wine list. Hamilton's supports sustainability in food production, transportation, and preparation, and in the community at large. You can see the lunch and dinner menus, make a reservation, or book the private dining space for your function all at hamiltonsrestaurant.com.
Welcome back. Take it away, Mel.
If someone wants to connect with you directly or your center, what are the best ways to contact you, Jessica?
So they can go to our website, which is virginianeurofeedback.com. They can reach out by email at info@virginianeurofeedback.com, or they can call the clinic at 434-878-3146 and make an appointment for a free consultation.
Okay, great.
Sounds good. You know, one of the things that I've noticed through the reading, these young people, you know, how they're mostly, at least from personal experience, mostly concerned with their little social network, their homework or their schoolwork, these immediacies. This whole COVID pandemic, the day at home, is having them all of a sudden they're thinking about their health. And that's a great thing. You know, when you're young, you just, oh, I'm going out. Yeah, we're going here and get something to eat, blah, blah. You don't even think about that stuff. But now they're saying, wait a minute, where are we going to go to eat? They're thinking about the food they're taking. They're thinking about their own health. And that's a silver lining I see.
I agree. Yeah. I think if it's a wake-up call for any age group to take care or to at least be mindful of your health and start thinking about what you're eating, what you're doing, exercising and getting outside and your mental health. Anyone who doesn't understand that at this point, that the baseline health is very critical overall, especially right now if you're going to get infected or be in contact to have better outcomes. I think any way right now that people can be more mindful about their physical and mental and emotional health is really positive. So I'm really excited, Mike, that you're seeing that and you're hearing that, because certainly the at-risk groups, the elderly, I think people with pre-existing conditions, this has been a big wake-up call. But I think it's a wake-up call for the planet that as a population, we are not healthy, especially in industrialized country in the U.S., including in the U.S. It's important for people of all age groups to understand the importance of just a good, healthy baseline of diet and lifestyle.
That is so true.
But did you have any other tips or any other ideas for our listeners and for us on how to help manage and how to better cope with what's going on? We're certainly going to share the contact information for your clinic, for you, and
yes, we are.
Resources. Yeah, the resources you've given up. But any final thoughts and ideas for us for this mental health episode?
Yeah, sure. Well, I would just reemphasize that for people who may not have ever reached out for help before, that there's a lot of resources and a lot of free resources right now. And it is a great time to do that. And I think that they might be pleasantly surprised with what they find in terms of help. There are some other sites that I'd just like to mention quickly. The National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI.org, has a list of coping strategies, as does SAMHSA, S-A-M-H-S-A, has some coping strategies. Those are both mental health organizations. So there are a lot of resources, even just in pamphlet form, that can help people. They can just read over them and think about that. But I would really encourage people to get out and take walks if they can, obviously, reach out to their social support and their network of close people, and just really check in with their bodies and say, how am I doing? How's my body doing? How do I feel? Do I have muscle aches? Am I breathing shallowly? And how am I sleeping? And because those things are really important for us to help keep our immune systems healthy. We can't just keep plowing on business as usual right now. It's not business as usual. We do have to stop and actually pay attention to ourselves and take care of ourselves more so than usual.
That's true. And the stress, I've noticed, just stress can cause all sorts of physical maladies, like ulcerative colitis, for one. That can really, if just stress alone can give you that.
Correct. So
reduce the stress. That's awesome. I'm learning a lot. I love this.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jessica. And I look forward to continuing to collaborate with you and connecting. And like, these resources have been really, really helpful. And just a couple of tips you've given us also very helpful.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for
thank
having
you
me on.
So much. And you can get with Melanie and she'll tell you how to access this. We are going to be putting this into a podcast as well on our 97.9. Station.
Great.
All right. Thank you, Jessica.
Right, thanks, Jessica.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
All right.
Bye.
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 You've been listening to Your Health with your hosts, Mike McBee and Melanie Doreen. To Your Health is brought to you by Be Vital Healthcare. Optimize health and performance by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. And by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. Be listening to 97.9 The Wren next Sunday morning at 8 for To Your Health.